So I would say the first thing to do is think about your own childhood, what the symbols were that were put into you. They're still there. Think not how they relate to an institution, which is probably defunct, which you can hardly respect, but think how they operate on you. Let them play on the imagination and activate the imagination and bring your own imagination into play in relation to these, and then you will be experiencing the marga, or the power of these symbols to open things up for you. And it's my belief, out of my own experience, that there's nothing better than comparative mythological studies to let you see what the big general form of the image is, and to let you get many, many aspects of approach to it. Because images are eloquent of themselves. They talk to you. And the concept system, the intellect, when it tries to explicate an image, can never exhaust its meaning, can never exhaust its possibility. Images don't essentially mean anything. They are, just as you are. And they talk to some range in you that is. And so, ask an artist, what does the picture mean that you've done? Well, if he despises you enough, he'll tell you. the point is that meaning, gosh, if you have to have me tell you what it means, then you haven't even seen it. What's the meaning of a sunset? What's the meaning of a flower? What's the meaning of a cow? The Buddha is called the Tathagata, the one thus come. And the universe is thus come. And all this dogma talk about meanings and moral values and all that, it has nothing to do with any of that. It's an is. And the way to experience one's own isness in relation to that is the way of handling these images. So much then for this basic point. There is a level of you in your dream consciousness that is the level of your nature, not of your personal biography. And your nature is of two orders. It is of the order of animal nature, the instinct system, which is the same in all human beings. And it's of the order of your spiritual life, what goes on from the neck up. No other animal has this great thing up here. And when Dr. Freud begins interpreting the inspirations and zeal of this end of the spinal column in terms of the other end, he is misunderstanding the whole thing. And since the whole sense of mythological religious imagery is to pitch you up into the spiritual realm, interpreting these things in that way pulls you down again and deflates and breaks the symbol. We share with the animals the desire to live, survival, security. We share with the animals the zeal for sex and the zeal for winning and prestige. I'm the winner. But there is another level, a totally other level, that can come to us in a moment like that. The level that came and is described in Dante's Vita Nuova, what turned him from a mere human animal into a poet when he beheld Beatrice. She was an erotic object. One way of seeing her was that way. But what he saw was a manifestation of beauty. It's something else again. He was struck with what's called aesthetic arrest. That's the beginning of the spiritual life. And as he tells us in the very first pages of that charming book, the spirit of my eyes said, you behold your delight. The spirit of life in my heart said, you behold your master. And the spirit of my body said, now you will suffer. Prestige, social relationships, security, all this, gone. She was this end of a beam of mystery that comes from the depth of the universe. And when he followed that beam, it led to the very seat of the image of the mystery of the world, namely the Trinity, in that tradition. So, point one, you've got to find in yourself that which moves you. And you will be moved, of course, on the level of a human being. But what puts you one step beyond the first front of life? Now, there's a wonderful work of Yeats, A Vision. I don't know whether you're aware of it. Fantastic work. Yeats is a relatively older man, married a young woman, who very soon after the marriage began writing automatically. And she began writing the whole philosophy of Yeats, which he didn't even know about. And that's the kind of girl to marry. And what came out in that was a very mysterious thing. And Yeats received this information as a revelation from informers. He was something of an occultist. And this is in A Vision. It's a very complicated vision. But there is one system of images there that seems to me very important for our present concern. It's that of what he calls the masks. The mask that you've got to put on in order to live. You've got to put a mask on. You've got to wear a costume. You've got to be something. Or seem to be something, at any rate. He spoke of what he called the primary mask, which is the role that the society presents to you to play. When you're born, your parents are communicating to you patterns of life that are those of that society or of whatever the society is that that particular parent happens to care for. And the hope is that this will lead you into life. The first half of life is engagement in the world, deshi, the imagery of the world attracting you to the world so that you put yourself into it, make an effort to live in terms of the possibilities today, in terms that the society puts upon you. When I was a little kid, they used to, you know, little boys that just buttons, rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief, all this kind of thing. What are you going to be? Well, I'm going to be garbage man. That's a great prospect. The primary mask that you take from the society. There is a second kind of mask, which he calls, and this is where it begins to be exciting, the antithetical mask. Just at the age of coming to maturity, of middle adolescence, there begins to dawn on one the sense of a prospect of my life, which is not the same as that which the society has put upon me. They never saw me before. I am a unique thing. There are great things in me, and by gosh, I'm going to find what they are. This is the problem of finding your own myth.